Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. But today we're going to be talking about something else. Perhaps I'd maybe want to call a discussion of celebrity power, Hollywood power. What would you want to diagnose it as? When I say diagnose, I really mean that. We have an interesting guest today. Her name is Diane Dorman. This is a lady who walked a route that not a lot of young women at the time that she walked it would have imagined their life's path would take them on. However, she decided to write a book about the playboys, the celebrities, and how they affected her life, what it was like. Diane, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I met you when I was in New York last fall, and yes, you had sent me your book. I was intrigued with something. You're a woman. You have a business of your own. You have a boutique. Mm-hmm. You're in Florida, the Sunshine State. What motivated you to write this book?
Well, I had so many stories in my head, and I just felt like I couldn't move forward and start a new project without getting the stories out there. And there were just so many. And I thought, you know, the 70s, the baby boomers were all part of that, and people would be interested to hear my stories and the fact that the people in Hollywood are not as they seem,
mm-hmm.
to say the least. And it was a big lesson to learn, growing up in a small town and taking my son after a divorce and going to Hollywood fresh out of the, you know, the womb. I knew nothing. I was so naive. And I learned you just can't believe other people. You have to trust yourself and go with your intuition because it's never wrong.
Now, when was it that you ended up going out to California?
I was 10, went with my parents from Chicago.
And you were how old when you ended up entering the world of Hugh Hefner? And just about everybody knows about Hugh Hefner. If you don't, if there's anyone that might not know about it that's listening to the show, he's the man that started the Playboy Bunny Clubs. He is the man that started Playboy Magazine. I mean, this guy has just been amazing with what he has evolved in his unique career of sex publicity and famous people. But let's talk about you. How old were you when you started moving in that circle associated with Hugh Hefner? It was just right at the beginning when he was starting, wasn't it?
You won't believe it, but I was old by the standards of Hollywood. I was 28. I remember telling my girlfriend, who ended up marrying Mark Spitz, she was my acting partner, and I said, you know, Susie, I'm 28. She goes, I wouldn't tell anybody that. And I said, why not? She said, that's old for Hollywood. So I was honest about it, and I got invited to the Playboy Mansion the first time because Hef had moved out from Chicago to start his business out on the West Coast because Barbie Benton found him the Playboy Mansion and he fell in love with it, so he bought it for $1 million. And I think it's worth about 40 now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so he took an ad out in the paper to hire Playboy bunnies, which are the waitresses for his new Playboy Club, and I applied and I was not called back. That didn't stop me because the following week there was an ad in the trades for the Playboy modeling agency he was opening. So I put my best smile on and took my portfolio and ran up to Sunset Boulevard, and I was accepted for the Playboy modeling agency. So that's how it started. But I guess by today's standards, 28, that's, you're done.
Well, yes, the world's changed relatively little relative to that, but the movie industry has opened up a little bit more for the older individuals, primarily because so many of them are, one, living to be
much
older. They've got the money.
Today's show this morning, they were saying how there's a resurgence of the 60-year-olds now for modeling and representing products. That you never would have heard of something like that back in the day.
Now, you have so many photos in your book, Playboy, Celebrities, and Me. You show the game room, and the mansion is just absolutely phenomenal. But you also go into mentioning a number of names, Linda Evans and her husband and so many people. I mean, everybody that was considered anybody was invited to the mansion, and he had all kinds of things going on. There is this mystique, I would say, fantasy about a lot of these things that go on. When you were 28, you said you were very naive. What was it that was the biggest area of discernment for you relative to this Disney world of unbelievable adult fantasy? What was it to you that made you wake up?
Actually, it wasn't at the Playboy Mansion that made me wake up. That was the one place that was not phony. Everybody that was there was either beautiful or famous. If you were a man, you could only be there if you were a famous person. He didn't have a lot of men around, obviously. He had the women. So you get in this bubble, and then you realize it's all about looks, and everybody's gorgeous, so you have to get over that. But where I woke up is going on the interviews, and the casting couches are so prevalent, and I just couldn't believe it. You know, the worst example is when they say, okay, well, we don't have a script. They call you in for a part. They call your agent. Your agent sends you. You go into a movie studio, which they've rented an office, which means nothing. Anybody could do that. And then they go, well, we don't really have a script, but we'll improvise. Well, the minute you hear that, then you know. They're on the wrong page, and you better get out of there. So I ran out of a couple of casting offices. And they're all the same. Telly Savalas, I mean, you name it, they're all on the same page.
With what you describe, you talk about being a non-union interviews because you weren't a part of the Screen Actors Guild.
At first,
and you had an agent that was, let's see, Richard Simmons. You bring up the experience you had with meeting him, and I met him when I was doing an interview on the same station that he was appearing on, and he is a hoot. I just think he is one of the funniest people. He's one of the most dynamic individuals that I've met, and he is just absolutely amazing. His stage presence and his charisma that I just saw firsthand right in the studio was just absolutely fun.
He always had that energy. He always, and back in that day, he was just working off of Sunset Boulevard in a little room. I think it was called the Asylum, and it was a workout place. And then the restaurant was in front. It was nothing, but he hung in there. And you can. I just have to give credit to anybody that makes it in that business, because if you don't have a relative or a husband or a wife or somebody that's connected, they're going to try to take advantage of you. So you better be a strong person and know who you are. That's that's what got me through, or I would have fallen prey to all the witches out there. So when people say, well, what advice would you give people to take away from reading your book? Don't go to Hollywood.
Well, that's going to be a tough thing for those that have a passion for the screen, that want to be involved in movies, that want to be the performer.
I know. Well, and as you can see, if you've watched that new show, Smash, it's the same on Broadway. So I guess it's basically probably the same in any business you're in when there's competition. But if you know who you are and you believe in yourself and you have the faith, you'll be okay. But you just can't believe what other people are telling you.
Lee Majors.
He was nice.
He was, I think, such a good-looking man. And just, how did you meet him? How did your paths cross?
The first time was at a racetrack. I was with my two best girlfriends that I name in the book. And he asked all three of us for our phone numbers at the racetrack. And being the outspoken person that I am, I said, "Aren't you living with Farrah Fawcett?" And he just brushed that off, and he still took our phone numbers. And then years later, I was working in a movie studio, and he came on the set to do $6 Million Man. So that's when I ran into him again. He was nice. He was shy. He's real quiet. He's just like, you know, just real laid back, real quiet.
The Beverly Hills Hotel. There are stories surrounding that place, and it's a five-star hotel. And they have ghosts. They've got everything. And it's off of Sunset Boulevard.
They built the town around that hotel. I mean, that hotel was there, and then it just sits up on, you know, the ridge, and it's like they built the surrounding areas over, you know, back in who knows what year that was, what era. But it was it's magical. It's magical, and you have to be somebody to get in the Polo Lounge. You can't just walk in. So I was lucky enough to be escorted there a couple of times on some nice dinner dates. That was fun. People watching was always fun. But it was the best at the Playboy Mansion, because there would be Warren Beatty coming in and out of the house, heading for the jacuzzi where the girls were. Dustin Hoffman was there. Paul Newman and Clint Eastwood would come up for the private fight nights, which I was very lucky to be on that guest list, because they cut the list way back of the women, and they only invited a few. So I was lucky. Probably because I could talk and carry on a conversation.
Amazing. Now, you really have had, and from the time you can remember, really had an interest in unique style clothing. That's why you like your boutique. And, in fact, there's a picture of you with a very unique shirt on. You are living in the right environment for what you're doing, and you love it. You have two little Maltese dogs that are just absolutely the loves of your life.
Yes.
When you found out about having the opportunity to be on television, and you were invited to go to 20th Century Fox, drop off your resume because Farrah Fawcett, they were looking for a replacement for her. Tell us about that.
I was sent out on a lot of interviews when they were looking for a Farrah Fawcett type, or the Charlie's Angels. She quit. Lee Majors had talked her into quitting after the first year because they were married. And so they were replacing her. But when I got there and I saw, I think it was Kelly Harmon on the set rehearsing, I went, "Well, God, she's gorgeous. Forget this." But when your agent sends you, you have to go. And Farrah and I had the same hairdresser. So I had the same hairstyle, too. I think I saw
you did, and the photo of you in here is absolutely gorgeous.
That was a good photographer. I know the picture you're talking about.
Yes, it's absolutely beautiful. And to have that abundance of hair, Farrah was just a doll. And
yeah, she was beautiful. The hairdresser, Hugh York, said I had thicker hair than she did. She was just such a knockout, though. My idol. She was my idol.
You did commercials? And you did a Suzuki commercial, and what was it? Was it easier doing the commercials than auditioning for, let's say, parts in shows? What was the difference?
Well, getting a commercial is more difficult because it pays better. You'll work one day. I did a sugar-free Dr. Pepper sitting in a bikini in some beautiful house for the day, and then you got residuals as long as it ran. So the competition was really tough for that. But any audition was horrible because you only have that short time to present yourself. Kind of like it was up in New York when I met you.
Yeah, you were given 2 minutes.
Yeah, 2 minutes, go. Okay, blah, 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 you know, you were very kind to me, so thank you. I think I thanked you in a letter, but you were very sweet, and you exude warmth and compassion. I appreciated that at that point.
Well, it's rather intimidating when you have a room full of talk show hosts, whether they're on television or radio, it doesn't make any difference, and you know you've only got so much time at the National Publicity Summit, meet with each one. That's why they make it such a tight interaction, and thank you for your very nice words. I love doing it because it enables me to meet some real different, interesting people, and that's what I like on my show, and that's why I'm calling you. Now, Warren Beatty, what was he like?
Playboy of the world.
Really? Playboy? I think you described him as the god of sex.
Because I thought he was the sexiest, most gorgeous man. I had such a crush on him, but he asked my roommate out and skipped me. I hate when that happens. We went up to the house that we're shooting Shampoo, and he had on this beautiful green velvet jacket that was in the scene, and he was standing in the kitchen. They were on a break, and I was with my girlfriend. We were the two original Miss Miller Lights, and after we met on that job, we became roommates. So she looked like Raquel Welch. I had Farrah Fawcett hair, and I thought, well, I think he likes blondes. But we walked into the kitchen, and we were introduced, and he ignored me and started talking to her. And then at 6:30 in the morning, the following morning, the phone rang, woke me up, so I was mad. And I hear this voice say, "Is Noella there?" And I go, "No, who's calling?" And he goes, "It's Warren." I went, "Oh, hi, it's Diane."
Why do we gals do that? I mean, you answer the phone and you're mad, and then all of a sudden, hello.
I know. I know. But see,
Oh, my goodness.
I was brought up with self-confidence, so I had the self-confidence to date famous people. I could hold my own. I dated George Peppard once, and I knew he was a creep, so, and I told him right to his face. But my girlfriend, was insecure. So any famous person that called the house and asked her out, she would never go.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
She missed out. I mean, it's an experience. But I found that the bigger the star, the nicer the person they were. And Hugh Hefner is the most gracious, kind man, just like you see on TV. That's exactly how he is. He just opens his home, offers all the food, which we appreciated because we were all starving actresses and models. And he's a wonderful guy. He sent me a thank you note 2 days after he got my book.
That is fabulous.
I mean,
that is absolutely fabulous.
I know.
Now, Johnny Carson was someone that you crossed paths with as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell us about Johnny.
Super gentleman. I was with Hugh O'Brien. I had been dating him, Cheapskate. So we're in Vegas.
Okay. Hugh O'Brien, folks, is a cheapskate. Is Hugh still with us, or has he passed on?
He is. Somebody was in my boutique last week, and they were looking at the pictures on the wall, and I overheard them say, "He died." And I said, "Who died?" And they said, "Hugh O'Brien." I said, "He did not." Now, I think he's still with us. I probably would have heard. But anyway, he's on one of those junkets. You know, famous people don't have to pay for anything. So we were at Johnny Carson's show. Talk about an ego. Hugh hands the waiter a napkin, and I didn't know what this was about. Turns out he's slipping the napkin, you know, backstage to let Johnny Carson know he's in the audience. So halfway through the show, Johnny Carson starts announcing who's in the audience, and the spotlight swung over, and Hugh stands up. I went, "Well, give me a break." So we went backstage, and Johnny started talking to me, and Hugh was talking to whoever, and we had a great conversation. He was saying, "It's tough to live in Bel Air because you can't go jogging because the police are always stopping you if you're not in the car.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
I know. But he was quiet and, you know, just a gentleman. Like I say, the bigger the star, the more secure and the nicer they are. They don't have to put that phoniness on.
That is a really interesting perspective because so many times you have people say just the opposite.
Oh, yeah. No, it's true. When Hugh and I would be walking through the hotel lobby in Vegas, he would plaster this big fake smile on his face, and I didn't figure it out at first. And then I went, oh, he's trying to get recognized. Because I never saw him smile. So, it's like, here I am. Too bad nobody cared.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. To see more details, God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now. Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it. Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Well, due to some weather, apparently we're having some interference with our equipment, so I apologize for those of you that have been waiting. And Diana, my apologies to you. I want to go back because something happened where my connection was dropped and I didn't hear your response. We were talking about Bob Hope and how he gave you your very first walk-on. Am I correct?
Yes, yes, you are.
And this is an incredible man. I have had many people that I've talked with through the years that just said being associated with him was Absolutely amazing. Of course, he did all his USO work and traveled around the world. What was your experience like with Bob Hope?
Do you really want to know?
Yes, that's what I'm asking.
Okay. I was thrilled to be on his show, and that was my first job, so he'll always be a special person in my heart for giving me my first walk-on job with AFTRA, I guess it was. And but then I was Playboy sent me on a second interview a couple of years later. Now, this is when I've learned a few things, and I'm not naive anymore. And we had there were 50 of us sitting in the audience so that he and his casting director could look us over to decide who they were going to pick. They did pick another gal from Playboy and myself, and we went to makeup and, not makeup, we went to wardrobe, and were told to come back the next day. But the next day, instead of the two of us that were at the interview, there were four of us. So I went, what? Who are they and where did they come from? And then I heard stories that he had girls all in apartments all over Burbank. So I went, well, they're all the same. What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. You know, what are you going to do? Dating George, Elizabeth Taylor, oh, she was beautiful. I was at the Academy Awards with Hugh O'Brien, and Elizabeth Taylor was in front of us after we were coming off of the podium talking to Army Archer. And I thought she had tried to get Hugh's attention. Big mistake, it wasn't him. And so I told him, I said, oh, that whoever that is wanted to speak to you when you were on camera. And so he said, she did? And I said, yeah, I didn't know who it was. So he taps her on the shoulder. Oh, my God. She turns around. She just glowed. Donna, oh, my gosh. Beautiful tan, yellow dress, big diamonds. Of course, she wasn't interested in talking to you or me, but I got to look her, you know, look at her beautiful face for a second, and she was stunning, absolutely stunning.
Well, that is a woman that I think a lot of books will be written about by different people now that she's passed on. But she left a tremendous legacy, and very few women are ever endowed as she was endowed with such amazing looks, just absolutely. But she also was an extremely talented woman and was very much dedicated because she lost so many friends to AIDS. But there's so much that she had a passion about for life, and very few people know how much that woman really suffered physically from various things that afflicted her.
She did. She had a lot of pain, but I certainly respect somebody that starts the AIDS charities when nobody wanted to talk about it in those days. It was taboo, and she jumped right in and kept it going, and that was very awesome. She was a legend. George Burns was a legend, too, but then again, you know, there's the story of, you know, he's trying to have affairs, too, and look how old he was, so... I don't know, and this is before Viagra. Go figure.
George Burns, everybody thought he was almost as old as God.
I know. He kind of thought he was, but he was hilarious. I went to his house, and we would have a drink, and I figured it out. He was practicing his jokes on me that he was going to tell later at the dinner that we would go to, and he was a hoot. It was fun to go out with him. He liked taking me to the big parties because I knew everybody's name, and he couldn't remember even my name. So before they would walk up to him, I would say, oh, that's Sean Connery, or oh, that's Michael Caine, you know. So I would whisper to him who was approaching him, but they would all come over, you know, and pay their respects to him. So it was fun dating him. He would give me a kiss on the cheek, and I would drive home. But then when I fixed him up with my roommate, it was another story.
Oh, well, the lifestyles of the rich and famous, I guess we could call it that.
I guess.
Restaurant. I don't know if Chasen's is still around.
No,
but
not.
It was a restaurant that was so well known in Los Angeles, and everybody went. I mean, this was the stage setting for so many famous people, and sort of like Hugh Hefner's mansion, but on a different level. And
it
the food
the
there, I'll never
the
forget.
Place.
Yeah, we had the opportunity, my husband and I, to go to Chasen's one year, and we will laugh till, I don't know, I guess till the end of time, about how, and then the prices were through the ceiling. I mean, it was just unbelievable prices.
Uh-huh.
And we had, as part of the meal, peas, and our host that had invited us to come asked a question of the waiter, because the peas that they served on the plate, and they said he wanted to know, you know, if there was anything special because they were so tiny. And the waiter said, oh, no, these are Le Sueur peas. And as long as I live, I'll never forget the host saying to me later, Le Sueur peas. Isn't that amazing? You can buy them at the grocery store for a dollar something. And this
That's
is
hilarious. That's hilarious.
Our Le Sueur peas. I will never forget that. And he would joke about that. Because those peas must have cost at least $5 a pea, because you just have to I'm telling you, it was hilarious. But anyway, that's one of the memories
Well, you know, Elizabeth Taylor used to have Chasen's fly their homemade specialty, which was chili, to the movie sets that she was on. When she was doing Cleopatra, Chasen's flew their chili over to Elizabeth Taylor. That's how famous that chili was. But it was such a story. I mean, every dignitary, every prime minister, every president, that would have been the place they went back in the day. And the Rat Pack used to hang out, I guess. And I read that they named the Shirley Temple drink after the real little Shirley Temple. Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they did. And when you get into the history on that, apparently she went there for something to eat, and they said, well, we want to fix up something for her. So the bartender had the syrup, the maraschino syrup, and that type of thing, and that's what made the Shirley Temple so popular. It's a fascinating thing how particular components create a legend and how something gets a name attached to it. Well, I know we've got about a minute or so. I wanted to ask you about Gene Hackman. This is a man who I think is one of the finest actors around. Mm-hmm. He's a true character actor. Mm-hmm. And he did The French Connection, which was a very powerful movie. People really, even today, whenever they see it, are very impressed with the presentation of it. It was an Academy Award winner. Tell us about how you got to know Gene Hackman, or how your paths crossed. Maybe I should phrase it that way.
I actually just met him at a restaurant when we were waiting for our cars, and he was standing behind me to valet, and he was quite a tall man, and I spoke to him for a second. But I knew the person that he portrayed in the movie, The French Connection. Eddie Egan was Popeye, and that's who Gene Hackman portrayed. But I didn't get in a conversation with Gene Hackman at the time because I hadn't met Eddie Egan yet. And I met Eddie Egan on an interview that Playboy sent me on because he was trying to do a sequel since he was the technical advisor on the first one. He was trying to get the financing to do a second one on his own, and he fell in love with Hollywood and left New York and went to L.A. But it's impossible to get nothing's impossible, but it's very difficult to get financing for a film. So there was never a sequel to The French Connection, but that was quite a story, meeting the real deal. The real deal.
Well, Diane Dorman, your life story that you have here of that particular point in your life in your late 20s, early 30s, is really an interesting read. And for those of you listening, if you want to find out more about her book, all you have to do is go to her website, Playboy Celebrities and Me. And it's Diane Dorman, DianneDorman, who now has a boutique in sunny Florida. This is a memoir, you might say, of past associations and the journey that she took and the lessons that she learned. It makes for an interesting read. Diane, thank you so much for being my guest today and for your patience with the electronic interruption that we had, but it was a delight having you as a guest.
We were too hot to handle, Donna.
Okay, whatever.
Thank you.
Diane. You're welcome. Donna Sebo here, PlayboyCelebritiesAndMe.com. Check it out. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone line, if you would like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And if you're a first-time listener and you'd like to call in, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then just let me tell you what I perceive. And you're welcome to ask me when I finish a question about anything that you like. Quickly, I want to mention to those of you who are in Washington State listening to the show, I want to say I'm going to be at the Emerald Spiral Expo on the 24th of March, which is from 9 to 5 on that Saturday. Admission is free to the public. I'll be doing many consultations. I'll also have a scad of books there. But I want you to know this is a wonderful event. If you've never attended anything that gives you an opportunity to mingle with people of different skills, crafts, abilities, services, this is something that's been around. This event has been around for so many years. It's one of the oldest events in the state of Washington relating to the paranormal. So it was really fun to be associated with them. I've done the interaction with them for years. And then we are now taking reservations. An email blast went out yesterday. We're taking reservations for our Quantum Mind 3 class, which is coming up on April the 14th. And this is a real dynamic class. Robert Newman is going to be sharing the training space with me again. Robert is going to be talking about Chinese medicine, and then also we are going to be having a segment on dreams, what to do with them, why they're valuable, how you can use them as a tool, and we'll be doing mind exercises, and I will be in charge of that segment. So if you'd like more information about this, you can go to my website, DelphiInternational.com. You can call me directly at 253-582-5604 if you would like to be a part of this class. It is limited to 25 people. It's April the 14th, so call me for your reservation now, so we'll be sure to get you in. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. I have the most adorable photo in front of me, and it is just amazing. Can you imagine baby bats all wrapped up, each one of them individually, in a very soft piece of cotton? I looked at this photo, and I looked at these great big dark eyes of these baby bats. They're just absolutely precious. Now, this photo is all about the floods that hit Queensland, Australia, in January of 2001. They found more than 130 baby bats. They wrapped them in these little tiny pieces of fabric and hung them on clotheslines while they recovered after they were rescued, because the floods were just, as you know, it was just mind-boggling to watch it. It's the last thing you'd ever expect to happen in Australia. It's just not what you would even conceive in the mind. And these poor people in Australia have really been hit hard between the fires and the floods. Now, the baby bats were picked up by the Australian Bat Clinic, and they bottle-fed all 130 bats, and they kept them in this little cloth cocoon of type so that they'd stay warm and that they would survive. I think it's amazing how tragedies, natural tragedies, you know, devastation that can be just unbelievable, the way people will just be phenomenal with innovation, taking care of animals. I think of what happened with Katrina here. The thousands upon thousands of people that contributed to the taking care and rescuing of the animals, and all on their own dime. I mean, the spirit of people is so amazing. And I know we get so much garbage that we hear about on the news. This is bad, that's bad. But when you really get down to the bare bones of it, there are so many more people that are out there doing good things that you don't even ever hear anything about. You know, they're just not broadcast over the news. It seems like the attitude is bad news is what really works. Well, I don't go with that. I really think that it's important for us to recognize that there are so many ways that we can contribute in life. And you may not be on CBS or ABC or the Fox News Hour, but by golly, you're making a difference just by being the best you possibly can be. I also wanted to share with you some other information about Australia. There are scientists in Australia that are working on a program to breed sheep that don't burp. I know. It makes you wonder sometimes. Do they ever consider how many humans burp? Well, they're so concerned about this. I just thought this was funny. They say they think that the burping sheep contribute about 16% of the country's total emissions. And they think that two-thirds of that comes from livestock, chiefly the result of methane being released from the guts of grazing sheep and cattle. I just have to chuckle, because I think there's a lot more going on than what they're able to evaluate. But we human beings like to put things in little boxes, but a burpless sheep. Okay. All right. Anything goes, I guess, in this world of ours. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Well, St. Paddy's Day is going to be coming up. And corned beef and cabbage has always been promoted. Well, I'll tell you what. Sometimes you need to have a twist on the version. Because if you really go back to the good old days, they didn't do too much in the way of fancy. First of all, if you could get the corned beef, that was something special. And number two, cabbage was a food that kept people alive during the winter months. The reason being is that you could pickle it, you could salt it, you could do all kinds of things with it. Sauerkraut, preservative, the brining made it possible for you to have food during the winter. It's something we don't think about very much today because we're so accustomed to the conveniences of life. And I always have to chuckle when people talk about, oh, the good old days, they were so much better than today. And I go, I don't think so. Lots of times people did not have the means to get meat. And not only that, but it was very difficult during winter months unless you had the good fortune of being able to preserve food. But I've got a recipe for cabbage that I'll share with you. We got a caller on the line. I'm going to take that caller, and then I'll share with you a beer-braised cabbage recipe. Yeah, it's a bit different than the good old days, and I think it's going to taste a heck of a lot better. But anyway, let's take our first caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
My name is Bruce, and I'm calling from Illinois.
From Illinois. Where in Illinois, Bruce?
Effingham, Illinois, down south.
Well, I'm so glad that you're on the line with us. It's a delightful to chat with you, and let me give you my mental impressions. Bruce, the first thing I'm looking at, there is a legal issue that you're going to need to determine how you want to approach. Now, there are going to be people that are going to suggest that you take a real hard line with this legal issue. And if I could encourage you to consider something, I want you to make sure you've got all your facts. Because I'm looking at an emotional component of this legal issue that could blind you to certain facts which could be used in a negative way against you. So you must be very, very clear. And if you have someone in your environment that has a real, almost like a cynical attitude, sort of like an investigative type of thinker that will challenge you, I think I would make sure before I pursue any legal action or take on anybody's attitudes about what you should do, you need to think through very, very carefully. You need to have your facts. Because if
so you're
you don't,
talking about a legal issue?
Yes,
sorry,
some legal issue. Now, this isn't something where you...
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. We're overlapping. There's a little bit of a time delay on the phone line. Let me finish what I'm saying, though. If you're not careful, this could end up working against you. So you need to be very, very thorough, and you need to not come from an emotional positioning. You need to come from a very, very practical positioning.
Okay. Is this a legal issue that I'm going to be pursuing against somebody else, or am I going to be in some sort of legal trouble?
I am feeling it's a combination. It's not your legal trouble. That's not it. It doesn't have to be trouble in the worst-case scenario. It is an issue that is going to involve ethics. It is going to involve a gray area that needs to be defined. And you will have a choice about proceeding with certain actions.
Wow.
So I think this is something that takes a lot of thought. More than that, you need your facts.
Yeah. Well, can I tell you why I called?
Sure, go right ahead.
I play in a band, and the band practices at my house. And normally it's just us, but last week it was the band plus the drummer's son. And I'm really conflicted over what's happened. I had an iPod. I know, it just, you know, it's a small thing. I probably really should forget about it. But I had an iPod that just seems to have vanished. And, you know, I have my suspicions, and I've really been just biting my tongue as far as accusing anybody. And it actually sounds a little similar to what you were talking about, although I'm not really planning on, like, you know, turning somebody into the cops or anything like that. I mean, it...
Well, I'll tell you what, Bruce. I think that there needs to be an approach with this because there is a violation of trust that has occurred. So how many individuals were there? About five or six?
Five.
About five.
Four band members and one band member's son.
All right. So what I would do, I would go to each of them. Don't single anybody out. And say, I am concerned because at the rehearsal, I had my iPod out and give them the name of it and say, I don't know what's happened. Maybe it got mixed up in somebody's equipment, but it was gone. And if you saw it, if you see anything, if you find in your equipment that it's there, I sure would appreciate it if it were returned. But I think it's important that you put it out there, that you let them know that something was missing.
Well, that is the way I approached it. It's been like 8 days ago that this happened, and I did ask everybody to kind of go through their stuff because, you know, maybe it fell into something, and, you know, even though that's not what I really believe happened, I tried to, you know, do the soft approach first, and, you know, that way maybe if somebody had it, they'd just, oh, I found it, you know, and it'd allow them to save face. But that approach hasn't worked to this point.
Well, then I would say you need to know that your suspicions are justified, and you may want to, should the opportunity come up, take the young man aside and say, I really would appreciate it if you could return it. Now, he may deny it, and his dad may get very upset, but you can talk to him in a way and say, it's between you and me, but I really would like for you to return it. But it is significant that he knows. You're correct in your assumptions, but this is something that needs to be dealt with, and then I would say the son is not allowed to come in.
Wow.
So you're going to have to draw some particular parameters here, but that did not, you've had the band over more than once, nothing's ever happened, but there is something going on between the father and the son anyway, and I just think you need to be alert and that he cannot wander through the house. I think there's some things going on in the family, and that's one of the reasons why the father wanted the son to come with him. So you just need to keep your eyes open.
Yeah, you know, my home is also my business, and several weeks prior, there had been some, near as we can tell, a few hundred dollars also went missing. You know, that could have just been our, you know how that is when you're doing your report, sometimes something doesn't add up because you've made an error somewhere.
Well, you've got someone that is pilfering, and this has happened twice in your home. And you need, since your home is your business, I would say then maybe you have to look at not having people in your home like you've had it before, and you're going to say, this is off limits.
Yeah.
I've had some incidences, and I cannot have this anymore. So you need to set your paradigm.
Okay. That was very helpful. I really appreciate that.
It's really hard when you have someone that you want to trust and you find out that that trust is not being respected. But you have to be out in the open with it, and you have to be very honest about it and then let it go. I do think that you do need to change your environment so that your business is protected and you have the right to say, no, you cannot go into the house to do this, that, or the other. Look at how you can set things up. If you choose to still have this at your home, then you need to take the proper precautions.
That surely makes sense. Well, thanks very much, Donna.
You are very welcome. I'm very grateful for your calling in. Is this your first time hearing the show?
No, I've heard it a few times, and I even called in once, I don't know, a year or so ago. I can't even remember why I called.
I appreciate your listening in every once in a while when you have the chance.
Well, it's a good show.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, well, have a nice day.
You too, sir. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. And we're going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to have that recipe to share with you, and also a little bit of a wee Irish poem. Yes, Donna Sebo here. We'll be back in just a minute.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Well, it looks like I'm going to have to save that recipe for you for another time because we're getting close to running out of time, but I did want to let you know, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Jessica Bryan, mediumship and the flow of grace. So we're going to have quite an interesting chat with that. But quick like a bunny, I'll share with you a little bit of an Irish poem. It's a legend of luck, a pitch of tradition to find a shamrock in the four-leaf rendition. Have you ever found a four-leaf clover? I never have. Ashley Levine, she is the lady that wrote that delightful little poem, and I've got this beautiful four-leaf clover that's right in front of me. You know, people that hold a charm that they feel is lucky, like a four-leaf clover or a rabbit's foot. Always, when I hear about rabbit's foot, I always feel sorry for the poor bunny that lost its foot. But anyway, why are good luck charms so significant? There is this association of emotion and a belief system that makes all the difference in the world in the psyche of the individual. Four-leaf clover, well, what is your belief? Whatever works for you is fine with me. And you know what? Lucky people seem to listen to their intuition, too. So they pay attention to when to avoid trouble and when to spot good opportunity. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always that you're the master of your fate, that you're the captain of your soul. Life is going to present you with all kinds of interesting adventures. Buckle up and be ready to have the ride of your life whenever that opportunity does come your way. Don't be afraid to try new things, new experiences. You can evaluate. You can be very discerning, and they can be rich for you. Or you can turn away and then maybe later on in retrospect think, I wish I'd done that. No I wishes, no shoulda, woulda, couldas. Enjoy your life. This is the moment. Live it right now. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you tomorrow, same time, right here on BBS Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.